So good morning. If you were here last week and Easter was your first Sunday here, welcome back. And if you didn't get a welcome package last Sunday, make sure you get a welcome package this Sunday. And like Rob was saying, maybe sign up for the New Year, or New Year's, the newcomer's breakfast. I'm a little off in my chronology there, sorry. Have you ever had the experience of reading a book, watching a movie, maybe talking to a parent, a grandparent, a great-grandparent, where they were describing something that happened in the past, you know, maybe some medical thing or some belief about science or whatever, and you went, what? What were you thinking? Like, that made no sense. Why did you think that was true back then? Have you ever had that experience, reading a book, movie, talking to people? Just put up your hand if you have. I'm not going to ask you what it was. But yeah, often that's like, seriously, you actually thought that made sense. The question of what were they thinking is a big question. Let me give you three examples. First one is this. Have you ever heard of trepanation? Oh, one person has. So here is a picture, or a couple. Okay, there you go. Here is a picture. Some people will say this is one of the oldest surgical procedures in history. There is someone's skull, and you can see kind of looks like a bowling ball holes in there, right? It's not really. But this is the belief that essentially, no matter what ails you, the solution is to drill a hole in your head. Right? So can you imagine going to the doctor? Man, I have a headache, or my back is sore, or whatever. Oh, okay, just sit in this chair. We'll strap you down, get out the old hand drill. Right through your skull. And remember, this is before the time of local anesthetic, general anesthetic, whatever, right? So there was a period in time where the belief was it was a viable medical solution to a whole host of problems to drill a hole in your head. And some people are going, well, that makes sense. So what were they thinking? Here's another one. Have you ever heard of bloodletting? Some of you will have heard of that. And so for those of you who don't know, it's based on the theory, the premise, that in the body, there are four, the body consists of four basic fluids. Blood, phlegm, as in that kind of phlegm, just in case you wanted the audio experience there, and yellow bile and black bile. And when those four fluids are in balance, then everything is good. But when they become out of balance, then that's when you get sick. And so the easiest one to manage, of course, is blood. So you can imagine, again, going to the doctor and, you know, you have a headache, you're whatever, back pain, you got a chest cold. Oh, we have the solution for you. Get in the chair, get strapped down, squirt the blood out. And not just a little bit of blood, but a lot of blood, because that will bring your fluids back into balance. Again, what were they thinking? There's a picture, right? Someone going to the doctor and just, I see a nice little shoot. But we look back at that in our time, in our age, and go, seriously, you thought that made sense? That, like, ridding your body of substantial amounts of blood is actually going to help you? Doesn't make any sense. How many of you, some of you may, have heard of soothing syrups? So there's some nodding heads there. And so here's this nice little picture of a mom, you know, holding her baby, and it's whether it's colicky, maybe you're teething or whatever, and it's like, oh, my baby's crying. I'll help soothe the baby. So you get this nice mysterious model. Now, let me read this to you. The Bureau of Chemistry at Washington has revealed the fact that morphine sulfate, chloroform, morphine hydrochloride, codeine, heroin, powdered opium, cannabis, and combinations of these dangerous soothers supply the active principle in nearly all of the soothing syrups sold. What are you thinking? Seriously. Oh, my baby is crying. I know. I'll get him stoned. That'll help. I think Doritos liked it, though. I mean, because the munchies go up and away you go. But seriously, what were they thinking? It's so common, isn't it, for us to look back sometimes and go, in what world did this make sense? Now, let me ask you to go the other direction. What would you think will happen in 100 years, in 200 years, when people are looking back at us? Things that make so much sense to us that we're going, well, this is an obvious scientific truth, an obviously clear biological reality. This is a no-brainer medical practice that this makes so much sense to us. They're going to look back and go, what were you thinking? Like, how did that possibly make sense? The reason I say that is because we're having the conversation today about God and science. And sometimes we think that concepts of science are these locked-in, eternal, obvious things that are just clearly right. The point that I'm making is that might not be the case. In the same way, sometimes our understandings of God, we think, well, that's my understanding, so therefore it must be right. That might not be the case either. We're always convinced as people what we believe is true, right? I mean, the reason we believe it is because we think it's true. I'm just saying when we have these kind of conversations, let's maybe back off a little bit, and aside from having some fun, let's have a little bit of humility as we go through this process. So here we are. If you were here last week, you know that we're in a series called Burning Questions. And very, very quickly, and if you want more details or whatever, you can get the audio from last week. But we're going through six different questions. Is there a God? Well, you can see them on the screen. God and science, problem of evil, which religion is true? Can we trust the Bible? Who is Jesus? Those are big picture questions that we're going through in this whole series, week number two we're in right now. It's a little bit different than our normal kind of teaching or series, because normally we'll take a section of the Bible or a specific text and kind of open it up and say, okay, let's dive deeply and see what's going on in there and how it's relevant and how it informs our behaviors and actions and all that associated with that. But this one, we're not. It really isn't text-based. This is more philosophical. We're starting with questions and saying, how do we wrestle with these questions how does the Bible and theology kind of incorporate itself into these questions? So it's a different kind of style of series than what we normally do. But I think it will be valuable as we work through some of these big questions. Again, if you were here last week, you heard us talk about different ways of exploring these questions. I'm not going to go through it all. You get the PowerPoint, listen to the audio, and you can get up to speed. But a real quick picture is we explore that as we ask these questions about God and reality and history and science, those big questions, there's four different ways we can explore them in general. One, you can see them on the screen. But as the conversation unfolds, sometimes in these conversations you go, oh, okay, that makes logical sense to me. If this, then that. And there's a logical flow to a question and to an answer. Other times, maybe we lean more towards evidence, scientific evidence, historical evidence, archaeological evidence, and say, when we see the evidence, this reasonable picture emerges. Other times, it's more a discussion that's around, as humans, we tend to ask these kinds of questions and have these kind of assumptions behind what we're saying across humanity. And so if those assumptions are a common human experience, it begs the question, why are they common? Did they come from somewhere? And so that's more of that that reformed authoritarian style. And then the last one is essentially saying, well, as we work through these questions, in my life, I've seen evidence of whatever it is. That rings true to what I feel, to what I've experienced, and more of a personal engagement with and justification for beliefs. And so all four of those often work their way together. We made the comment that our personalities will shape our questions and our answers. Some of us are more wired to explore it more logically. Some are more wired to explore it experientially. And we go all over the place. And our point of this series, or our strategy, if we do it well, will be to weave all of those together so that there's multiple approaches to many of the questions, so it's not just kind of one approach. That's all the big picture stuff, and a quick little crash course in case you weren't here last Sunday, and if you were here last Sunday, hopefully that sounds familiar. But the question today is, what about God and science? Where's this conflict between God and science? I'm going to actually ask the question, is there really a conflict between God and science? And I'll unpack that in just a minute. But have you ever had that conversation with somebody, or read something, or heard something, or watched a video, or where someone said that, man, if you believe in science, there's no way you can believe in God, like seriously. Or the reverse, if you believe in God, well, you can't believe in science. Have you ever heard that or had that kind of experience where it's one versus the other? They both can't be right. It's this or this. Make up your mind. I believe this. What do you believe? I've had that experience a number of times. You see it and hear it and whatever. Have you guys ever heard that? Yeah, I think so. And that's why this is a big question. Let me back up a second and actually give us a short history of this conflict. And I have conflict in quotes for a reason. Here's a 4-minute history lesson on the history of the whole idea of God versus science. And I'm going to actually try to do it in 4 minutes. First, I'm going to make 4 points. First one is simply this. When we look back in history, the reality was understood to be one whole thing, a united thing, up until about the first or third century, meaning the whole idea of God versus science was a complete nonsense question to ask for the majority of history. People weren't asking that. It was assumed and believed that all of reality was one holistic thing. There weren't separate categories of science and religion and theology and anthropology and all these categories that we have, the way we separate often spiritual from material or physical or supernatural from natural. Like, we live in a world where those two have been identified and have been separated. That's not the history of most of the world. At about the first or third century, that kind of dualistic thought, it's called, starts creeping into things, maybe had some Platonic influences, maybe not, but you may have heard of Gnosticism, essentially a perspective that there's two worlds, the spiritual world and the material world. The spiritual world is good, the material world's kind of a poor reflection of it. And anyways, it wasn't until the first or third centuries that those ideas even start creeping into culture in a meaningful way. So as a result of that, not as a result, that's chronologically incorrect, because of that, the Bible doesn't talk about two different worlds. Nothing in the Bible does. Maybe some of the later books start to wrestle with that because it's becoming a cultural thing, and the early church leaders had to wrestle with that, but the Bible doesn't divide the world into physical, non-physical, scientific, spiritual worlds, the humanities, whatever. It all blends together, as everybody was blending it together. There was one world, one understanding of reality. It wasn't compartmentalized like it eventually became over history. Then if I just whip past a whole pile of history and ignore it all and end up in the 19th century, what happens there phenomenally in terms of phenomenology and culture is that people who were doing science, as it progresses, scientists becomes a viable occupation all on its own. Up to that point, often it was the priests, the pastors, the clergy who were the scientists, and they were doing it all together. But as things progress, you start having people who were botanists, who were biologists, who were astronomers, and that's defined who they were. And then at the same time, you had clergy who weren't doing as much of that scientific work. And so you have these categories of occupations of people that start to separate. And then you've got someone who's, I'm a scientist, I'm a clergy person. We all know, we've lived long enough in the world, right, is once you start to identify yourself and label yourself, the next step that often happens is you compete, and you have personality conflicts, and it's not so much philosophical as it is personal. Once that started to happen, then these ideas of a conflict came into play, but a lot of it was just simply personality driven. Like, I know I've generalized a lot of history in just those 4 minutes, and I think I might have actually stuck to 4 minutes, but that's kind of the history of that conflict. Most of the world hasn't known or perceived that there is a conflict between the two, but coming out of some Western thought in the last couple of hundred years, personalities have kind of clashed, and now you get the odd person who's very, very noisy saying there is this massive conflict that can't be reconciled. But it's interesting, when you read the research and the surveys, the vast majority of scientists say there's no conflict between religion and science. It's just a few people think that there is, and depending on how they define their terms, there might be. Anyways, that's a quick history. So here's my question: can't we just be friends? Can't Christians and scientists, people who believe the Bible, people who do science, can't we all just be friends? Here's my other naive way of saying: is there really a conflict between God and science? I want to suggest there might not be. And I'm going to do it through a number of quotes that I'm going to read. These first three may be interesting to you. Here's the first quote. Is this. This is from a significant scientist. "It seems to me absurd to doubt that a man may be an ardent theist and an evolutionist." Now, let me back up a little bit and explain some of that stuff. He's saying, this doesn't make any sense. Why would we even doubt that a person, a man or a woman, could be an ardent theist? And ardent just means like a passionate, convinced theist, which is someone who believes in a personal God, not a deist who believes, oh yeah, there's some God, but that's historical or irrelevant or whatever. A theist believes in a personal God. And the capitalization is his capitalization, not mine, in case you're wondering. Someone who, I don't see why we should even begin to doubt that someone can't be an passionate believer in a personal God and also an evolutionist. Now, it's not capital E evolution, because evolution as a worldview, as a philosophy, it has a lot of conflict with theism. But evolution as a biological process, as a scientific theory, he's going, I don't see any conflict here. Why would we doubt that people can't be live in both camps. They can't be a passionate believer in a personal God and also an evolutionist in terms of biological process. And then he says a little bit more and then comes to this personal statement. I think that generally, but not always, so I'm not always sure on this one, that an agnostic would be the most correct description of my state of mind. So he's saying, personally, I kind of go back and forth. I'm not sure where I land, but in theory and philosophically, I see no reason why you can't live in both worlds. Do you know who said that? Charles Darwin. Oops, where'd my... Okay, for some reason that's missing. Charles Darwin said it. I think it was 1874 he said it, which is interesting because and people who think that there is a conflict often throw his name around to justify the conflict. Ironically, he doesn't buy into the conflict. So if you carry on, here's another quote that is also, I think, significant, and it's this. There was trouble with this in the first service, hopefully not in this service. Now, even though the realms of religion and science in themselves are clearly marked off from each other, in other words, I recognize that religion and science are different. They run in different areas. I get that. They're not the same thing. They're different. Even though that happens, that's reality, nevertheless, there exist between the two strong reciprocal relationships and dependencies, meaning these two, if you have a reciprocal relationship, that means you can't exist without each other. You need each other. There's dependency on each other. Science needs religion. Religion needs science. He says, if they're different, but they absolutely need each other. The and talks a little bit more and fleshes that out, and then concludes by saying the situation may be expressed as an image. Science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind. So here's another very eminent scientist saying, no, what's the conflict? Seriously, do you know who said this? The last quote might give it away, if the slides work. Albert Einstein. So Darwin, Einstein, both people saying, there's no conflict. Why would there even be a conflict? Now you could argue, yeah, well, both those guys are dead. So they represent an old worldview and whatever. Fair enough. So here's the third one. Scientists and theologians have written eloquently about their awe and wonder at the history of the universe and life on this planet, explaining that they see no conflict between their faith in God and this evidence for evolution. Again, small e evolution as a biological process. Science and religion are separate and address aspects of human understanding in different ways. I love this last line. Attempts to pit science and religion against each other create controversy where none needs to exist. That wasn't said by a pastor. That's official documentation from the National Academy of Sciences. There is no conflict. There really isn't. The vast majority of scientists and theologians would say, there's no conflict. They actually complement each other. But there are some who are determined to make a conflict exist where none does. Now, those are all quotes from scientists. What does the Bible say about it? Well, that's where it gets trickier, thinking of what I said earlier, because it's anachronistic to read our concepts of science back into an ancient text. So if we read the Bible looking for words like astronomy or botany or biology or science or whatever words we use, they don't exist in the Bible because the Bible was written before those words came into play in our current culture. And the same thing is going to be true when someone in history looks back at us. You can't read things back into history and complain why they're not there, because books always describe the context that they were written in. But I think there's a nice little glimpse in the book of 1 Kings chapter 4 where it describes someone in the Old Testament who, in my mind, blends all these worlds together. Here's what it says. God gave Solomon wisdom and very great insight, and a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sand on the seashore. In other words, he was smart. A bunch of stuff and comparative things that there are in the next few sentences. And then he, meaning Solomon, spoke 3,000 proverbs and his songs numbered 1,005. In other words, he was a student of the humanities. He spoke about plant life from the cedar of Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the walls. In other words, he was a botanist. He also spoke about animals and birds, reptiles and fish. In other words, he was a biologist. It's a wonderful picture of a biblical, significant biblical character who sees the world in its entirety holistically and doesn't pit one thing against the other, recognizes the existence, the sovereignty, and the power of God in all those contexts, whether it's science, whether it's the humanities, whether it's theology, whatever it is. I love that little glimpse of Solomon, because it's like, okay, these things, why are we determined to have this conflict? That doesn't really exist, especially from a Christian worldview. So in a perfect world, and if you follow along in your handout, if you collect those on Sundays, there's a couple of fill-in-the-blanks, and this is the first one. In a perfect world, or I could say in Mark's perfect world, maybe, but in a perfect world, God and science do not simply coexist. As long as they don't interact with each other, as long as they kind of ignore each other, it'll be okay. In a perfect world, they don't simply coexist, but rather they complement each other. Let me put a visual on that. Say this, that this circle represents science, not scientism. Scientism is the belief that knowledge can only be obtained through the hard sciences, through the physical sciences, which is actually a really narrow-minded, naive, and arrogant claim, because it's saying, it doesn't matter if you study history, theology, philosophy, art, blah, 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 blah. There is no knowledge to be known through any of that. Knowledge can only be achieved through the hard sciences. That's scientism. It's naive, it's arrogant, it's misguided. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about science, healthy, the actual scientific study and scientific process. So that, and then you have your other circle, God, which represents God, not deism, because that's just kind of a concept of God vaguely exists somewhere in history, which is flawed all over the place. But where science and God overlap, that's the sweet spot of understanding the world that we live in. Because the two blend very well together. Let me give you, in the last couple of minutes here, a very specific example of how that might work. Now, in case you're wondering, I'm not going to talk about creation and evolution. We've talked about that at church before. If you go even to last September, not this past one, but the one before, did a couple of Sundays on that, talked about six different theories of origins. And so if you like that kind of conversation, just go on our website and search for creation and evolution. Like, just type those words in the search box, and you'll find lots of conversations we've had about that. I'm going to go in a different direction this time. We're going to have a little more focus. And now imagine that that circle is medical science. So not just any kind of science, but medical science. Biology, health sciences, all that. Medical science, and this other circle, I mean, is the Christian God. Now, a healthy worldview only works if there is a Christian God. Not just any God, but a Christian God. And here's why. Medical science does an amazing job of describing the mechanics and function of human life. How the body works, how it's supposed to work, how to figure out if it's broken, how to figure out possible solutions. You have something wrong with your knee? You can take your leg apart and put a new knee in. Like, that's unbelievable if you think that, well, through the significance of that, or whatever disease. Now, there's lots of things that medical science can't do yet, but what medical science can do already is incredible. Great depth of understanding of how the human body works, how things go wrong, how to fix it. Probably most people in this room have been personal beneficiaries of good medical science. Does an amazing job of that. But it doesn't do something that God does. An understanding of God tells us all about the value and the purpose of human life. Science can say nothing about the value and purpose of human life. God doesn't say anything, hardly, about the mechanics and function of the human body. Let me bits and pieces here and there. Much more concerned about the inherent worth, the value, the purpose of a human life. Here's where that all comes together. Because those two overlap, I can now know the how and the why of doctors treating my dad's leukemia. Because if it was just science, could do a great job. Hey, Dad, you've got leukemia. Man, your bone marrow and your blood's all messed up, and here's why it's happening, and here's some solutions to fix it. You know, here's a certain cocktail of chemicals to help and some pills and all that. Here's how we can do it. But why should we bother? Scientifically speaking, the mosquito that I killed on my arm every May and June in Prince George that drives us nuts is no different than my dad. Just a blob of biological stuff from a scientific point of view, another biological being that has no value, has no worth. In fact, it's probably actually a waste of time to try to save my dad, because what's my dad going to offer back? Nothing, right? He's outlived his usefulness. He's retired. His career is over. He's old. So from a scientific point of view, yeah, we have the understanding of how that disease works and have some solutions and some possible ways to combat it. But why? My dad's useless. has no value, has no inherent worth. But God says, my dad is incredibly valued. He was made in his image. He has inherent. Inherent just means built in worth and value. My dad is worth saving. And you don't get that from science. You only get that from the Christian God. And not just any concept of God, because other concepts of God wouldn't add value to the human life. The Christian concept of God does. But on the same hand, if you have just the Christian God, oh, my dad is so valuable, he's worthwhile, we love him, he's inherently valuable and needs to be saved, but if we don't have science, we have no idea how to save him. The two have to fit together. They aren't separate worlds. There is no conflict. I would argue the Christian view of the world embraces all that and puts it together so it is a complete whole. We need both. This is interesting, I think, when I look then at the life of Jesus, and go, okay, what would Jesus' perspective on this be? And again, I know you can't read scientific terms back into the New Testament, but you can understand concepts. And let me give you just three quotes, two about Jesus, one that he says himself. Jesus went throughout Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness among the whole people. Jesus came to redeem all of reality. He spoke, he taught theology, spirituality. He interacted with people. He brought healing, which is physical, which is scientific. It's dealing with biology. Jesus doesn't have a separated, compartmentalized of the world. It's everything together the way God designed. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and healing disease and sickness. Jesus' view of reality encompasses everything. This is Jesus' word that he quotes from Scripture and then applies it to himself. The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and a recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free. The heart and mission of God encompasses all of reality, including the sciences. If some of you are in school and you follow Jesus and you're going, oh, sciences intrigue me, but am I allowed to explore the sciences? Does that mean I'll walk away from my faith? Will someone push me away from your faith? Absolutely not. The sciences need you. If you love Jesus and you love science, then go full speed into science. Embrace the sciences. Bring your Christian worldview with you. They aren't in conflict. If you're a scientist or you're studying the sciences, you're going, but I don't know if there's any room for God. Your science is pointless if you don't have room for God. Two fit together. There is no conflict. The Christian perspective is that the world that God created and God himself are completely compatible. So let's pursue both. Here's the question I leave you with as the worship team comes up to lead us in one last song. What do my heart and my mission encompass? Do you or I live trying to keep areas of life away from each other? I don't want to talk about science and God at the same time, or someone who believes in God, I don't want to talk about science, or someone who's a scientist, I don't want to talk about God, or whatever. Or do we embrace all of it? It all fits together. There is no conflict. God created the world. That statement right there, God, his existence, created the world, speaks to the physical nature of reality, and they fit together. There is no conflict. Can I ask you to stand, please? And let me pray for us, and then we'll sing this last song. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much that you are the creator of the universe, that there is no conflict between science and God, and you and your existence, and we can be passionate followers of you and excellent scientists. Help us to know how to put those worlds together, to have conversations with the people around us, and help us to do it in ways that glorify you. Ask all that in your name. Amen.